Timmies and Spikes, we must all arrive at the win condition.
Real bad, wasn't it? Was that a MTG dad joke?
That was an MTG bad joke.
Oh, I'm getting beaten up over here.
Hello again, and welcome back to the Win Condition Podcast, your source for lore, news, and brews in the Magic the Gathering community. My name is Sean. I'm your host. I'm joined by my co-host, Greg. How's it going, Greg?
Doing okay tonight.
Awesome. Very, very cool. Well, Greg, it's, you know, we're in mid-June here. And it hasn't quite crept up to the 100s yet here in Fresno. It's been kind of tame. How's it been going in the Bay Area?
About the same. We hit 90 today.
Okay. Awesome.
At least that I know of. I know I'm going to be hitting the triple digits, though, at the end of this week.
Yeah. Well, I am in the midst of having 2 weeks off of work, which is absolutely fantastic. And, you know, now that we've got our pool going, it is just, it's gravy. I'm loving it.
Wait, you're off for the next 2 weeks and you're not making it to Vegas?
Yeah, no. Such is the life of an MTG dad, which we will get to later. But one of the things that we will not get to later is the fact that we are brought to you by Flipside Gaming at flipsidegaming.com, where you head over there and make an order of any product, be it Magic or other games. If that price is over $10, use that promo code WINCONDITION in all caps and save yourself 10% off your purchase, which will help contribute to future show giveaways. So, Greg, we are through with our Dominaria storyline. And
we are.
We have some very interesting speculation as to what is going to happen in our next non-core set block.
We do.
But we have a major, major character that we wanted to dive into and kind of start to extract a little history from one of the major characters in Magic's, in Magic's history. Who would that character be, Greg?
Ugin.
You just love going the opposite direction.
I totally do. No, we are not going into Ugin. We are going into the enemy of all. That is Nicol Bolas.
The most maniacal, devious, possibly most intelligent being in the multiverse. But
Yeah.
All that being said, Greg, let's head on in to Lore Corner.
All right, so we're going to give you a little bit of interesting information. We're going to start with a description of him, and then we're going to go and talk about each of these areas and how we feel about them, if we want to touch a little bit more on it, because Nicol Bolas has been a part of Magic before the Phyrexians.
Yes. He is
so,
the oldest known living being in the multiverse. So he has quite a bit of history. We are going to do our best to give it to you in sort of the Cliff Notes version and then discuss any interesting points as we go along. But we just find this guy just to be so compelling, and we want newer players to kind of understand where he is coming from and any of the previous events that he's been involved in. So we wanted to bring you the abridged history of Nicol Bolas. Greg, why don't you kick us off?
Well, I'm going to start here with the description. So Bolas is considered to be the most powerful planeswalker of the multiverse and the oldest being. His hallmark is his touch, an inborn ability that causes a mind-shattering effect with the slightest caress. You can't really think when he touches you. He is a master of black, blue, and red magic and has many lifetimes of experience and knowledge. He has dual Teferi, and is very skilled in blue magic to nullify time magic.
Yes. His
origin... Well, go on ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that we've seen in our recent story Bolas' ability to just pluck thoughts out of people's heads and just be sort of omnipresent and omniscient, hence the card. But yes, let's head on into his origin. Nicol Bolas was old before Dominaria was even born. He sired entire races, populated entire plains, then hunted them to extinction for his amusement. So we have a sadistic, cruel character right off the bat with no lack of power. Mm-hmm. And and enjoys doing it. So, we have the Dragon War and his ascension. So thousands of years before the Brothers' War, that was, of course, Urza and Mishra, or even the Thran Empire, the earliest known society, I guess, in history of the magic multiverse.
For magic, yeah.
Yeah. The Elder Dragons were engaged in a conflict that tore the fabric of countless planes. Nicol Bolas emerged victorious, though there were survivors other than himself. His brothers Arcady Sabbath and Chromium Rule, his sister Palladia Mors, and their cousin Vivictus Asmati, and possibly others. During the crescendo of the war, Bolas became a planeswalker. And some thousands of years later, Bolas fought a demonic Leviathan in what would become the first planeswalker's duel on the still young plane of Dominaria. The fight lasted a month, reduced Madara to a third of its original size. Was Madara the demonic Leviathan that he was talking about?
No. That is actually an island. Oh. That is a continent.
Okay.
So, if you're looking at a map, it is to the south of the Zalafrin Void.
Okay, thanks to our Dominarian map that we had recently got. It's pretty easy to discern there. Okay. And he created the first temporal rift. In the end, the dragon relied upon his touch to defeat his foe. After the battle, Bolas feasted on the remains of the Leviathan over the course of a year, absorbing its power in the process. When he finished, naught was left besides what eventually became known as the Talon Gates, a plane from Plane Chase, if you have those cards, and an assortment of blubber. Bolas regards the Talon Gates as his finest trophy and visits them and Madara as often as he can to relish in his victory.
I'm pretty sure the Talon Gates is a place that's on Dominaria that is used as planar travel at one point.
Right. Yeah.
All right. So we're going to continue on down. This is mostly in time order. We're not 100% sure on this.
Right.
The next grouping is defeating Ugin.
Ooh.
Bolas's maliciousness and power came to the notice of the planeswalkers, Azor and Ugin, who devised a plan to completely destroy him. We talked about this in Ixalan.
Yes.
To this end, they wanted to use Azor's spark to create an artifact known as the Immortal Sun to trap him on the continent of Torazon on the plane of Ixalan, and Azor would summon Bolas into the plane and trap him there. Ugin would then remove him from existence entirely, to their grief. Bolas had discovered the plans thanks to Azor leaving hints of himself on the planes that he had ordered. In an effort to thwart their plan, Bolas traveled to Ugin's home plane of Tarkir, finding a willing pawn in Yasova Dragonclaw, Khan of the Temur clan, who sought to end the reign of Tarkir's oppressive dragons. Her conviction and commitment to the destruction of Tarkir's dragons coincided with the ambitions of the Elder Dragon Planeswalker himself. To this end, Bolas gave Yasova a vision of a peaceful and idyllic Tarkir, littered with the bones of dragons. In her vision, a great dragon with scales of burnished gold and a golden orb floating between his horns promised Yasova that if she would lead him to the lair of Ugin, the spirit dragon, he would slay him, and the dragons would be no more. Of course, guided by Yasova, he intercepted Ugin on Tarkir as the spirit dragon prepared the ritual to call him there. After a close battle, Bolas was finally able to defeat the spirit dragon when Yasova turned Ugin's own lesser dragons against him.
Ooh.
Now, this was in the original timeline where Ugin died from the physical and magical energies Bolas had inflicted on him. However, the planeswalker Sarkhan Vol had traveled back in time 1,280 years in the future and saved Ugin by encasing him in a Hedron cocoon immediately after the battle ended, preserving the spirit dragon in a state of suspended animation. And unbeknownst to Bolas, the time stream has changed so that Ugin still lived.
That
dun dun dun.
That pesky time traveling storyline of the Khan's Block. Man, I mean, knowing what we have experienced there, anything is possible. Just because you have a character deceased does not mean that we cannot travel around in time to bring them back. But we've really only seen Ugin as sort of a match of Bolas in battle. I mean, he did battle Ajani, which we will probably encounter later. But the fact that his mind control, coupled with the help of Yasova Dragonclaw, can turn those forces against him. He is so powerful. It's just...
He really is.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing.
So the next part, we go back to Dominaria with the Madaran Emperor.
Yes.
At some point, Bolas somehow became metaphysically tied to the Madaran temporal rift that he had inadvertently created thousands of years earlier. As a result, he became unable to physically manifest on Dominaria without anchoring himself to local mana lines, lest his presence overwhelm the plane and crack its foundation. On Madara, three lines of blue, black, and red mana intersected at a single point that was ideal for Bolas' purposes. Bolas slew the then Empress of Madara and erected his imperial shrine on the focal point. From there, he reigned for 400 years as God Emperor of Madara.
God Emperor.
Unfortunately, he's got accomplices, right? God Pharaoh, God Pharaoh. Emperor.
Yeah, exactly.
Fortunately, Bolas created his own worst enemy in the form of his imperial champion, Tetsuo Umezawa.
He created Tetsuo Umezawa? Holy cow.
One moment. After several trials, Tetsuo renounced his title and declared his intention to slay Bolas. Killing the dragon's regent in a fit of rage, Bolas abandons his body to follow Tetsuo's spirit into the meditation plane, unaware that it was a trap. This would ultimately prove to be a fatal mistake. Using the Meteor Hammer spell, Tetsuo destroys Bolas' Imperial Shrine while Bolas' physical body was inside, severing the Elder Dragon's anchor to Dominaria completely.
What? Okay, wait. Let's unpack that here for just a second. He creates Tetsuo Umezawa. Umezawa decides to slay Bolas.
Yep.
And then Bolas abandons his body to follow Tetsuo's spirit into the meditation.
Now, one moment. So here's the thing. I got to bring this up. Tetsuo was not born of Bolas. He was born of Clan Umezawa. So there's stuff going on there. But the training and everything was taken over at a point by Bolas.
So Bolas essentially was training him. His influence was creating...
A lot of training in the meditation plane. There's a good story page there that I just looked that up. That's actually kind of crazy.
So all right. Bolas's anchor to Dominaria was gone. Is that why he not travel? Oh no, he did travel at the end of the story to get Liliana. Okay, so
he may not have actually fully traveled.
That's true. That's true. Okay. Okay.
That
I'm
could
sorry.
Have just been a portal there. All yeah, right.
Go ahead.
So, without a physical form, Bolas's spirit form was unable to escape back to Dominaria or any other plane. And without his connection to the abundant Dominarian mana that he used to fuel his spells, he was left without most of his magic. His physical superiority was rendered irrelevant by the nature of the meditation plane, which was a realm of thought and spirit. Furthermore, Bolas was largely unaware of its workings. While Umezawa had experience manipulating the fabric of the plane's reality, stripped of his advantages as a planeswalker, a sorcerer, and a dragon, and forced to battle in a realm where his opponent had a significant edge, Bolas was defeated and apparently killed by Umezawa. However, as a result of his connection to the Temporal Rift, a ghostly remnant of his life force still lingered by the Madaran coast, trapped between the material world and the meditation realm.
So he was defeated by Umezawa. Holy
yes.
cow. I mean, I thought this guy was almost invincible. Like, I almost feel bad for the guy now.
No.
But,
no.
I mean, was he wielding his jitte? What was going on? Like, that's crazy. I mean,
there's more details in that story.
There are.
Another time.
Yeah. And, you know, we're nabbing this off of the wiki page about Nicol Bolas, but there are so many little links here that'll take you to even deeper stories about certain segments. So, there's so much more here, but yeah, we're just trying to get all of this to you all at once as quickly and efficiently as possible. So anyway, let's move on here. So we have time rifts. So Bolas's essence remained present in his land, which became overrun by the Nikoru descendants of Wasatora and their followers. So wasn't
Didn't
that...
Didn't we get that card recently?
Yeah, that cat dragon from Commander.
A Jund colors
yeah.
cat dragon at that.
So as the Temporal Rift expanded, he became able to manifest in Madara again, albeit as an immaterial shade. In this form, he presented himself under the alias of Sensei Ryu. When he sensed that the planeswalker Teferi was lost in a rift and had become separated from his companions, he arranged for them to arrive on the Madaran beach near the Talon Gates. Ah, his favorite place. Using Venser's latent planeswalker spark, he was able to finally escape his prison and be fully reborn into the physical world, regaining
wow.
his body by pulling a copy of it through the rift from an earlier point in time. Who is this guy? He's like, I don't exist anymore, but I'm going to pull myself forward in time and then just inhabit my body again. Guess what? I'm back. What? Okay, all right.
Wow.
Ooh, let's keep going. After Teferi located his companions, he challenged the dragon to a duel in an effort to stay Bolas's gratitude. Bolas easily won, absorbing and planeswalking away from Teferi's attacks, after which he tortured him with his mind-shattering touch and ripped his body to pieces. Of course, Teferi is who we're talking about. So Teferi's body ripped to pieces. While Bolas was taunting Teferi's allies with the defeated planeswalker's head in his claw, the dying Teferi shared his knowledge of the collapsing planes with him, and he was made aware of the severity of the rift problem. Bolas decided to let Teferi live, allowing the dismembered mage to heal himself. What? Keep in mind,
yep.
this is all pre-mending, so planeswalkers were pretty much still godlike.
Yeah.
He soon left after swearing a vow to take terrible vengeance on anyone related to the Umezawa line, and anyone who had ever aided or come into contact with it, then presumably left for Kamigawa. Bolas later returned to Madara, where he was ambushed by the planeswalker Leshrac, who formally challenged him to a duel. The latter was defeated after an epic battle and was imprisoned in the Mask of the Myojin of Night's Reach. Bolas implied that he had stripped most of the Night's Reach's dark power, but she had managed to escape. Bolas then confessed to Teferi and his companions, Teferi must have put himself back together pretty quickly, and his companions that he had observed the rift phenomenon and took responsibility for closing the Madarin rift. In a way, he had used Leshrac's life force to close the rift, believing that it was unlikely Teferi and his band could forestall the imminent collapse of the multiverse. Bolas claimed that he had devised a plan to preserve himself in the event that happened. He then left for an unknown destination, likely Amonkhet. Although the multiverse survived, Jessica's mending spell, here we go, here's the mending, changed the nature of the planeswalker's spark. Bolas, like all other old planeswalkers who survived past the mending, lost a significant portion of his powers. Still, he retained the formidable powers of an elder dragon, as well as his unmatched intellect. Holy crap. That's
so a lot. Can you unpack all that information?
I'm going to take some time to do that. I might need to jump into a rift for that. But just this guy is crazy. I mean, he's so incredibly powerful. I'd love to learn more about what happened when he went to presumably Kamigawa. Maybe we'll learn about that if we ever do decide to return. But
he went there to destroy the Umezawa clan for the most part.
Right. Right, but
because the Umezawa clan has the ability to slip between the fabric of planes.
Oh, okay.
So they don't planeswalk through the blind eternities. They go a different way around.
Wow, and we did get, what was it, Tetsuko Umezawa?
Yes.
In the newest
Tetsuko
set?
Tetsuko. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
All right, so continuing on from there,
so
we have the invasion of Amonkhet. At an undisclosed point directly after leaving Dominaria, shortly before the mending, Bolas turned his attention to Amonkhet, drawn to the strange metal named Lazatef and its reaction with necromancy. During his arrival, he found himself opposed by the gods of the world. Despite his waning power, the Elder Dragon proved to be a formidable enemy, laying waste to the population and driving the gods before him until they gathered in the city of Noctamoon for a desperate last stand. In secret, the god Bantu conspired with Bolas to betray her brethren. When the dragon broke through the protective barrier of the city, he cast a spell that killed every single adult being on the plane, weakening the gods enough to subdue them and corrupting them to worshipping him instead. The spells that maintained the corruption would be maintained by Bantu, who hoped to be rewarded by Bolas later.
How wrong she was.
The mummified dead of the plane to raise the children, he built himself monuments and wrote prophecies that would tell of his glorious return, drawing on the phenomenons like the Curse of Wandering. One of these promises, when he returns, he will shatter the Hekmah, the magical barrier protecting the populace of Amonkhet from the horrors of the Broken Lands, and call those who have passed the trials of the five gods suicide to grant them a true afterlife. The remaining ones, including the gods themselves, will have to prove their worth to him, just like the mortals they tested before. The theology of this religion would be kept in the accounting of hours afterwards. Bolas left, waiting for the time his scheme would pay off. Additionally, Bolas warped the angels of the plane to serve as his agents. Bolas also spread rumors that he was the one who had created Amonkhet, which was later reiterated by Liliana. The people of Amonkhet found his false prophecies that he will return when the second sun is positioned between the effigy of the Bolas horns on the plane. This is a highly anticipated and reflected in figures of speech.
I forget what the exact saying was in that storyline, but anytime they had mentioned the god Pharaoh, it was, may his return come quick, and may we be found worthy. I think that was it.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Then Several decades after the mending, a severely weakened Bullis met with a wizened Liliana Vess. She was jealous at the fact he was seemingly unaffected by the mending. He berated her, stating that he had lost more power than she could learn in a dozen lifetimes. Bullis lamented that only a few years previously, planeswalkers like them were akin to living gods who exerted their power and influence throughout the multiverse. Bullis proceeded to act as a middleman for four demons to form a contract with her to restore some of her power and youth at the cost of her soul. His price for this was presumably her service to him in the future.
No, wait, what? Is it?
That's misconstrued. The contract was set up that she would obey the demon's wishes, and she didn't read in the contract that in the event that all demons were to be dead, she would be Nicol Bolas's pawn.
Right, so she would have had to have known that it would be servitude in the future, lest she, you know, not kill the demons and just hang out with her power. But anyway, wow, that's, yeah, this is all sort of coming together now. So after the mending, Bolas lost the ability to retain much of his 25,000 years worth of arcane knowledge. He managed to escape to the plane of Alara, where he began machinations while dwelling in the shard of Grixis, claiming the necropolis of Kedrekt as his own. He prepared to take advantage of the coming conflux to regain his power and started to manipulate certain individuals and organizations on the multiple shards to create an environment ripe with tension and ready for war. For Bant, that's white, green, blue, the Order of the Skyward Eye and Gwaffa Hazid spread xenophobia and disorder along the borderlands of Bant's nations. For Esper, that's white, blue, and black, the Seekers of Karmat warned Esperites about dwindling supplies of Ethereum and created a fervent demand for the otherworldly redstone called Karmat. For Grixis, that's red, blue, and black, Malfagor led massive armies of the undead, gathering hordes ready to invade the other shards and cut chaotic swaths through any living resistance they find. For Jund, Rakhamar stirred fervor for greater and greater life hunts among the warrior clans there. And in Naya, that's white, green, and red. Sorry, Jund is red, green, and black. For Naya, Marisi stimulated the emergence of the philosophical schism of the Nicodle Cloud Empire and the revolt of the wild Nicodle that resulted in the destruction of most of the advanced Cloud Nicodle civilization and cities and in the Cat People's Nation regression back to savagery. So he kind of dipped his hands in all five shards of Alara to make sure that the turmoil persisted. So once again,
yes,
doing his little manipulative thing. And then also in Alara, it's the first time we see the planeswalker Tezzeret. So he survived a near-death experience on the Shard of Esper, awakening his latent spark. He found himself on Grixis atop the Kedrekt. After fighting off several creatures, all of whom presumably hoped to gain favor with Bolas, the artificer was approached by the dragon himself. Bolas offered him power in exchange for servitude, which Tezzeret accepted. The agent
of Bolas
himself. Yeah, I know, right?
That was a bad choice for him.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Oh, well. So, sometime after the mending, Bolas founded an interplanar consortium, which was usurped by Tezzeret in a bloody coup d'etat. Bolas retained his mind-reading ability, and Tezzeret, fearful for his secrets, tried to counter it by using Jace Beleren. This ended in disaster, as Bolas easily overwhelmed both planeswalkers mentally, and the pair barely escaped with their lives, fleeing from Bolas's hired barbarian horde. At the end of Jace's struggles, after he defeated Tezzeret in a duel and crushed the artificer's mind, it was revealed that this was all a plan Bolas agreed to in order to regain his consortium. Liliana Vest was the original architect of this plot and had approached Bolas with her plan. What? Bolas did not regain his organization, but he had obtained Tezzeret's still living but mindless and crippled body. Now he is the agent of Bolas.
Yes, yes, yes. Now, this was a really cool book to read. Agents of Artifice, it was the one you got the book, Jace, from. It was really good. I do highly suggest it.
Yeah.
So as we continue here, there's also some really cool planeswalkers you come across in that story that we still haven't seen yet.
Right.
And we hope to. All right, so the next step is Alara Unbroken. The full gravity of Bolas's plans came to fruition with Alara's conflicts. Through the manipulation of the peoples of all five shards, his plan to trigger full-scale war erupted across Alara, awakening the obelisks of mana on each of the shards and causing the maelstrom to grow in magnitude. Over the course of the conflict, he acquired the servitude of Sarkhan Vol to help spread seeds of destruction across Naya, because Sarkhan wanted to serve a dragon.
Right.
Ajani's quest to find his brother's killer eventually led him into conflict with Bolas. And knowing that he could not defeat the dragon god himself, he summoned the essence of Bolas's own soul to fight for him.
What?
The Irsat's dragon battled Bolas in perfect symmetry before they lunged at each other with powerful bites. Both connected simultaneously, and in a flash of light, the dragons disappeared. It is unknown how badly hurt Bolas was, having harvested the essence of most of the maelstrom immediately prior to this climactic battle.
Wow.
Because if you remember correctly, Ajani is a soul sorcerer.
Yes.
That's why his colors are red, white, and green. He can pull out your power of your soul to be able to use it against your enemies.
Exactly. It's like he had Flame Shadow Conjuring on his side.
Something like that.
Which is red.
It is red.
Yeah.
Then in Mirrodin Besieged, Bolas demonstrated great interest in the war on Mirrodin. He sent Tezzeret there to observe and assess the rise of the new Phyrexians on the plane, and to serve as Bolas' eyes and ears in the Phyrexian hierarchy. Ultimately, though, the artificer's mission was to delay the rise of a central leader for as long as possible, a task which was doomed to fail. The Elder Dragon on Zendikar. At some point, Nicol Bolas took notice of the volatile nature of Zendikar. He investigated the Eye of Ugin and left after studying it. Long afterwards, Bolas sent Vol to guard the Eye to make sure nothing disturbed it. Sarkhan was, however, misled. When Bolas had sought out and defeated Ugin, he had extracted a great deal of information about the Eldrazi and the lock that kept them contained. Knowing of the Titans and what it would take to unleash them, Bolas sent Sarkhan to the Eye and manipulated the pyromancer Chandra Nalar into arriving at the same time. Unfortunately, that only solved two-thirds of the problem. And so Bolas gambled that Jace would show up if prodded in that direction. The purpose of his manipulations was clear. The release of the Eldrazi. But the reason he wanted them released remains shrouded in mystery.
He would want these interplanar beings to come and just ravage the plane of Zendikar? But why? Why? Nobody knows. We'll just have to wait and find out when we return to the battle to return for Zendikar, Ravnica, return to Kamigawa. Anyway, moving on. We're coming up here on some more recent storyline. So with the Hour of Devastation on Amonkhet, Bolas' scheme worked as intended, with hundreds of the worthy dead becoming converted into his eternal army. When he came to the plain and materialized above his throne in Noctamoon, he found the city in ruins, its gods fallen, and the population under assault from his minions. Perfect. Pleased, he turned to the treacherous Bantu, commanding her to kill the last of the gods, Hazoret, When Bantu managed to defeat her sister, Bolas instead rewarded her with death, forcing several undead to tear her apart. Sorry, Bantu, but you kind of messed with the wrong guy. Seeing his plans come to fruition, Nicol Bolas now turned his attention on the Gatewatch, a meddlesome group of planeswalkers that had come together to stop the Eldrazi Titans on Zendikar. Asking himself if they were suitable for what he required, Bolas waited for them to form their strategy. As each of them attacked him with their own methods, the dragon proved resilient and even condescending. He sure as heck did. Using his tail, he kept the invulnerable Gideon at a distance by whacking him against the structures of Noctemoon and simply ignored Chandra's flames, Nissa's vines, and Liliana's zombies. Focusing on Jace, Bolas let him briefly enter into his mind before crushing that of the telepath, sending him fleeing from the plane. Turning to the rest of the Gatewatch, he addressed Liliana and offered her a chance to survive the confrontation. Offering to tutor her in the use of the chain veil, he demanded her to leave and retreat to another plane where he would contact her. The necromancer took the offer, even asking her teammates to join her. Bolas now turned his attention to the rest, taking Chandra into one of his claws and breaking several of her ribs with brute force, while lecturing her on the futility of using fire against a dragon. As the pyromancer planes walked away to save her own life, Bolas turned to Nissa. Using his command over the corrupted world, he turned her link to the land against her to attack her with necromantic magic, forcing her to flee. Now facing Gideon, the sole member of the Gatewatch remaining, Bolas took him into one of his claws and used magic to pierce his invulnerability, giving him a choice: stay and die, or live and betray the oath he had sworn at Seagate. Eventually, Gideon fled too, leaving Bolas victorious. Only a few minutes later, Tezzeret, good old puppet Tezzeret, appeared and was sent by Bolas to check on the progress of Ral Zarek. Reveling in his victory, Bolas celebrated the first steps in his plan for reclaiming his stolen power. What? What? Oh my gosh.
Yes. Maybe he's planning to drain all the planeswalkers.
That's definitely a good possibility.
So, next we go. Claiming the Immortal Sun, Bolas sent Tezzeret to Kaladesh to fetch a portable planar portal. He then sent Vraska to Ixalan to lay claim on the Immortal Sun. After Vraska then found the artifact, she summoned Tezzeret, who took it away on his planar bridge. Now, we also know there was a lot of information here with the one we called Jace.
Yes.
Then there's the planning of the conquest of Ravnica. After putting together some of Bolas' machinations on Ixalan Amonkhet, Jace and Vraska theorize that something on the plane of Ravnica is of extreme interest to Bolas. It seems to be part of his plan to reclaim his lost power in order to reach this goal. They reason that he plans to invade the plane with an interplanar army of immortals while trapping the resident planeswalkers.
Wow. What a guy. I mean,
what a... Sorry for the yawn.
So, I mean, we're gonna see what happens once we hit probably the third block in this Ravnica blocks of sets that we're going to be coming up on here. But man, this guy is so incredibly powerful. And, you know, having read about a couple of his defeats, he does not seem as invincible as I kind of took him for, you know, kind of before going through this. So,
yeah.
I mean, he was an Elder Dragon legend, you know, when Legends was around. He was just a creature. But now that he is a planeswalker, he is insanely powerful. So
he really is.
We'll just have to wait and see what happens with him as we move forward back into Ravnica. But, wow, that was, you know, as long as that was, that really wasn't even... that detailed in terms of everything that he's done. So
no, this is only a scratching of the surface. There's so much more going on that is going on with him.
Right.
Wow, I just said going on twice.
Yeah.
I'm not tired, I swear.
No, I mean, starting with his battle with this unknown Leviathan of insane power, all the way up through his, you know, time on Amon-Ket, stealing the Immortal Sun, he's done so much. And a battle with Teferi, dismembering him, that's crazy.
I mean, he has the battle with Jace, too, where Jace just has nothing.
Right, right. But maybe this new and improved Jace will actually come around and give him a little bit more fight this time.
If only.
All right. Well, let's move on from lore corner here. We have quite a bit that we wanted to go over. I'm not sure how much we'll get to today, seeing as our story did take kind of some time. But why don't we jump on in to As Foretold? All right,
so much to talk about here.
I was going to say, let's edit this, Greg. Do you want to talk about tournament stuff, or do you want to talk about previews?
I'd rather talk about previews.
Yeah, okay.
Because right. This kind of gets us into some cool, really cool storyline plots.
Absolutely. All right, well, so since we had some tournaments, you know, we had a Star City Games Invitational Modern Tournament. The top eight was incredibly diverse. We also had a No Ban List Modern Tournament, which... we can kind of talk about a little bit later if we have time for it. But what we really wanted to get into here is M19, the new core set coming out. Greg, we got some news in regards to packaging, promos, and more. You want to kind of start us off talking about some of this stuff here?
Well, as we go on to the mothership, if you don't know what that is, that is dailymtg.com. We're talking about everything coming up, and there's just so much.
Right.
There really is.
We have an article by Blake Rasmussen, which he kicks off by dropping another bombshell. We have the Buy a Box promo card, again, only available by buying a box of M19. This card is Nexus of Fate. So for 5 blue, you get an instant that says take an instant. Instant. I totally forgot about that part. Holy cow. Take an extra turn after this one. If Nexus of Fate would be put into a graveyard from anywhere, reveal Nexus of Fate and shuffle it into its owner's library. Greg, this is a game changer here. Instant.
Yeah.
This is the only take an extra turn instant spell that we've seen. Am I right?
No.
Which one?
Final Fortune.
Final Fortune is an instant?
Are you serious? It's a double red instant. I'm serious.
Okay, keep talking. I'm going to look that up.
Now, you want to remember the cool thing about Final Fortune is the original one. It says target player takes a turn and then they lose the game.
What?
Or take an extra turn. So what people would do is say you take the extra turn.
That was errated, right? That had to have
been. Yeah. Totally got errated.
Okay.
But you could do that to somebody and then watch them die.
Interesting. Oh, my God, you're right.
For a 2-red instant.
Final Fortune is an instant. Wow. Holy cow. All right. All right. Continue.
So this is, as we know, Nexus of Fate. There's Crux of Fate. And all these Fate cards, of course, it came as a Fate Reforged kind of card.
Yeah,
it is Sarkhan going back in time to save Ugin.
Yes. Yep.
It's kind of cool. And then we got some event promos.
Yes.
The first one being Gutter Snipe.
Yep.
For the open house. Now, if you guys don't know what Gutter Snipe does, it's a 2/2 for 3 Goblin Shaman that says, whenever you cast an instant sorcery, deal 2 damage to each opponent.
Yep.
Card's pretty good.
Yep. We deck tech somebody's modern deck tech with or modern deck with it was a blue and red kind of storm deck, and this card is very useful in multiplayer games. Very, very awesome.
Extremely. So as we pass on to draft weekend, we're gonna have Desecrated Tomb.
Oh my god.
Yes, right? This card's so bonkers. So it's a 3 generic artifact, and it says whenever one or more creature cards leave your graveyard, create a 1/1 black bat creature token with flying. Now, if you say, for instance, Rise of the Dark Realms, 20 creatures from your graveyard, you also get 20 bats.
Yep.
If you time reversal 5 creatures into your deck, you get 5 bats.
Right. If you cast the backside of Commit to Memory and you shuffle your graveyard back into your library, all those creatures in your graveyard will create 1/1 black bat creature tokens. This card is so nuts. I'm shocked that they would print something like this. This seems so powerful, so good.
Yes. So as we push on, you get the Magic League in late July, where the promo will be Reliquary Tower.
This is going to be a very, very sought after card. Tons of EDH players are going to want this for their decks.
Then there's going to be a store championship in June, which will be in Dominaria Store Championships, but you will be getting this special Demon of Catastrophes that has an M25 stamp on the front of it for the 25th anniversary.
Right.
Now, the Demon of Catastrophes is a 2 generic black creature demon that says as additional cost you cast it, sacrifice a creature. It is a 6/6 flying trample and does not have the same negatives of most of your demons.
Right. Now, this card is definitely going to be seeing some competitive standard play, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
Possibly, well, I don't know about modern, but still, 6/6 flying trample for 4 with no drawbacks other than you sacrifice a creature is pretty amazing. Now, also, the winner of the store championship will receive a beautiful playmat featuring Nicol Bolas himself. I don't see the head egg, though. What happened to his head egg?
I don't know.
More on that later. Maybe. Possibly. Possibly not. But then we get some Friday Night Magic promo cards. We have Elvish Rejuvenator, which is 2 and a green for a 1/1 elf druid. When it enters the battlefield, look at the top 5 cards of your library. You may put a land card from among them on the battlefield tapped. Put the rest on the bottom in a random order. Then you get Militia Burglar, 2 and a white.
Bugler.
Oh, shoot. Burglar. Bugler. Thank you. Militia Bugler. 2 and a white for a 2/3 human soldier with vigilance. When it enters the battlefield, look at the top 4 cards of your library. You may reveal a creature card with power 2 or less from among them. Put it in your hand. Put the rest at the bottom of your library in a random order. And then we have Murder for 1 black. You get an instant destroy target creature. Love that flavor text. It's not work if you enjoy it. Definitely something Nicol Bolas would say.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we're going to have some standard showdown, which is going to have rotating lands, beautifully rendered by Elena Danner. And then there's a bunch here down in the welcome decks that we're not even going to go over because there are so many.
Right.
There are a few random cards that are really cool. Now, these are going to be a part of the kits. We're going to have Patient Rebuilding, which is Nicol Bolas rebuilding Amonkhet in his vision. His 3 generic blue that says at the beginning of your upkeep. Oh, it's an enchantment. Target opponent puts the top 3 cards of their library into their graveyard. Then you draw a card for each land card put into a graveyard this way.
Huh.
Yeah, that is a cute mill card that mills somebody and gives you card draw.
Yeah.
The next one I feel is just really strong, plus especially in these mono green stompy decks that are running around. Gigantosaurus, which is a creature dinosaur. It is a 10/10 for 5 green mana.
Yep.
That's right, you heard it. 5 green mana gets you a 10/10 vanilla.
Remember, Fusion Elemental from Conflux was Wooburg, so 5 mana, but one of each color, and it only gave you an 8/8. This is mono-colored and gives you a 10/10.
It's really cool, yeah.
In the dinosaur tribe, so that's just gravy. That's awesome.
All right. So then as we continue on, we get our artwork. You want to talk about the our art on the packs?
It looks like here on the packs, we have artwork for Tezzeret. We have artwork for Liliana. We have artwork for Ajani. And is this Sarkhan?
That's Sarkhan.
That we have on this one here. And then the other planeswalker, oh my gosh, I forget what her name is.
It is Vivian Reed.
There you go. So we have five planeswalkers depicted on the packaging for Corset 2019.
We also know the planeswalker decks are going to be Ajani and Tezzeret, which I think they were going to be letting us get early.
Really?
Huh. Yeah, I thought they were going to be releasing the planeswalker decks prior to pre-release.
Okay. Well,
I'm not 100% sure on that one.
We know Nicol Bolas will be present as well, and who knows how many planeswalkers they're going to shove into this set, but we already have quite a few options that we're going to see. And one definite one, which we will talk about in our next section, we're going to go ahead and head over to Mythic Spoiler here and start talking about some of these new cards that we're going to get in M19. And here we go, kicking us off, we have Vivian Reed, a brand new legendary planeswalker for 3GG. You get a 5 loyalty planeswalker with a +1. Look at the top 4 cards of your library. You may reveal a creature or land card from among them and put it in your hand. Put the rest on the bottom in a random order. A -3, destroy target artifact, enchantment, or creature with flying. Some good protection. And a -8, which will take you about 3 or 4 turns to get to. You get an emblem with creatures you control, get +2/+2, and have vigilance, trample, and indestructible. So that's pretty strong. I mean, it's a good green planeswalker. Good. Nothing broken. You know, very, very core set of it. But pretty sweet planeswalker there.
Yes.
Why don't you bring us on into the next interesting card here?
I'm going to go with a black card. It is Infernal Judgment. It is a 1 black instant that allows you to exile a colorless creature.
Wow.
Now, this is anywhere from an Eldrazi to an artifact creature.
To a Wyrmcoil Engine. To a Thraxos. You also gain life equal to its power.
That is correct.
Right. But seeing this in, like, sideboards against decks that involve Wyrmcoil Engines, you know, you can exile it, you gain that 6 life, and they don't get their Wyrmcoil tokens. That's pretty huge. So, and then you'd mentioned the flavor text. Like, this is not Nicol Bolas in the card. This is not Demon Lord Belzenlock. Obviously, he's dead. Like, who is this guy?
Well, so the Google Foo, the people in Mythic Explorer, says it is, as soon as these intruders will be gone from Zendikar, Zendikar will be my throne, my pleasure, my playground.
Huh.
And so nobody knows what this guy is, but he definitely looks to be holding something like an Oblivion Sword size Eldrazi in his hand.
Right, so this guy looks massive. I mean, he could be a planeswalker, or he could just be some ridiculous, like, 15-15 demon creature, because he looks to be bigger than Emrakul. That's, he's huge.
Maybe. It's hard to say, really.
Right.
And then the other cards that we got were mostly from the Welcome decks, which just has some cool cards in it.
Hey, we get yet another printing of Colossal Dreadmaw. Who's excited? Not me.
What about the Shivan Dragon?
The Shivan Dragon? I'm not as excited because it's not the Melissa Benson art, the original one. Like, you bring that back, and I will get hyped over Shivan Dragon, but not so much. Let's see here. Were there any cards of note as we go through Mythic Spoiler?
Oh, yeah. Apex of Power.
All right.
This is a 7 red, so that is a 10 cost sorcery in red. And it says, exile the top 7 cards of your library. Until end of turn, you may cast non-land cards exiled this way. if this spell was cast from your hand, add 10 mana of any one color.
What?
The flavor text says, as I desire, so it shall be. Nicol Bolas.
I guess so. Man. That's nuts. Oh my gosh.
Right.
And then sticking with the cards released on May 30th here, we have Sky Scanner, a 3-mana artifact Thopter. So it's a 1/1 flyer. When it enters the battlefield, draw a card. This can go in any deck. It's great protection. And at only 3 mana, you're drawing a card too. That seems pretty powerful. I could see this going in a few competitive decks, especially in standard. That just seems really good. Let's see here. What else do we have?
Vivian's Invocation.
Okay.
Which is 5 and 2 green, so 7, sorcery, that allows you to look at the top 7 cards of your library and put a creature card from among them onto the battlefield. Then you put the rest on the bottom of your library in random order. Then when this creature is put onto the battlefield this way, it deals damage equal to its power to target creature an opponent controls.
Wow.
So it does not fight, it just goes, oh, well, I'll put out a 5/5 and deal 5 to your dude.
Yep. Yep. I keep on coming back to Warstorm Surge's mechanic and how effective that is. Anything that can do that is A-okay in my book. And then we have a couple cards here that seem pretty core, you know, not to pun or anything, but these are also in the Planeswalker decks here too. You have Riddlemaster Sphinx, 4 blue-blue for a 5/5 flyer. When it enters the battlefield, you may return target creature and opponent controls to its owner's hand. You have Grave Waker, 4 black-black for a 5/5 flyer. Tap 5 black-black. Return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped. And then you have Sarah's Guardian, 4 white-white for a 5/5 flyer, vigilance. Other creatures you control have vigilance. I mean, we're coming from Dominaria, where cards like this were at uncommon. I mean, they were legendary, but these are also from the Planeswalker deck, so they probably would be a little bit more nerfed.
Yeah.
So.
Hey, I think I like the Aggressive Mammoth and Sarah's Guardian that gives other creatures you control trample or other creatures you control vigilance. I think both of those are good as 6 drops.
Oh, yeah. That actually sounds really, really good. You get both of those down in a game of EDH, and you're doing it. So.
Yes, you are.
Okay. All right. Well, we have a bunch of other cards here, and it seems like M19 is pulling cards from all over the place.
Yeah.
You got cards from... I know you had some speculation as to whether or not this was going to be based on Plane or just trying to get all these cards out for people. And I think, yeah, it's going to be the latter. You're going to have a lot of cards from a lot of different sets in here. And let's hope that when all is said and done, it just makes for a fun draft format. You know, because
hopefully
that's a lot of what these, you know, developers are going for nowadays with these sets. So, yeah. Let's move on out of the As Foretold segment. And, Greg, we had a couple of listener emails here. I think we're actually only going to have time really to go over one. So we're actually going to save the Brewmaster's Lair for another episode. We got an email from a YouTube content creator. Let me see if I can pull up my mail here.
I didn't mail it off, so I don't think you're going to find it.
You didn't mail it off.
Oh, man, that was real bad, wasn't it? Was that a MTG dad joke?
That was an MTG bad joke.
I'm getting beaten up over here. Do you guys hear what he's calling me?
Oh my gosh. All right, let me find this here. So we had an email from one of our listeners who is starting up a YouTube channel called MTG Dads, which will focus on being a dad, a husband, and or a grown adult working full-time who is still playing Magic. And he was wondering if we had any tips about consistently creating content and making the time to do so, etc., etc. So, I mean, I just wanted to kind of touch on this because this really has been a thing that has been, you know, really shaping how, Greg, you and I can actually do this, record this content. And we did actually used to, you know, create a lot more gameplay, YouTube content, what have you. First off, let me start out by saying that the best thing is to make sure that you have the support of your spouse, significant other, whomever, in what you are doing. A way to do that is, you know, obviously when you get to know them, when you meet them, or if you've been in a relationship for a very long time, you got to let them know that this is something that you are very passionate about. This is something that you really look forward to each week. I know for Greg and I, we record once a week, or at least we try to. And I'm very upfront with my wife about letting her know that, you know, this is my one outlet a week. This is the time that I am choosing to put forth towards my creative outlet. Seeing things like, you know, email responses, contest participation, interaction on a consistent basis. She is honestly impressed. You know, she's like, wow, people actually listen to you. And I'm like, well, yeah. I mean, you know, we try to put out something for people's entertainment each week. And that really sort of helps her sort of digest me sitting in our office for 2 hours twice a week, once to record and once to edit. You know, it definitely comes with its hang-ups here and there. You know, you might have to pause an episode of recording for a minute because your babies are crying or in need of some help. Or you might have to stop editing for a while because something came up and you need to spend some time. But it's really all about prioritization and time management. If you can set aside a certain amount of time, you know, each week to dedicate to content creation, if that's podcasting, if that's, you know, creating videos, or even playing Magic, going to Friday Night Magic, going to, you know, Saturday Showdown, make sure that this is something that is planned ahead of time. You don't want to spring it on your significant other at the moment of when they come to you and they say, hey, I was hoping to go to a movie with you tonight. You know, do you want to go see Infinity War or whatever? And then you say, oh, geez, I'm sorry, babe. I want to go play Magic instead. Well, then that's a whole different animal, whole different battle you're going to have to fight. And we don't want to create fights. You know, we want to create understanding and appreciation. You know, maybe invite your significant other or your kids onto one of your episodes, if it's a YouTube video or a podcast. Let them feel like they're part of the creative aspect of it, you know? Because then, who knows, you might get some feedback from your listeners. Hey, I loved when you had your wife on and you guys talked about this. Or, I thought your kids were adorable. Can't wait until they start to play Magic. Or this, that, and the other. You just do not want to single yourself out of your family because this is something that you don't think they'll understand, or that you don't want them to be a part of, or that you want to get away. That's the last thing you want it to appear like to your family, significant other, whomever, your kids, you know. So it's like I said, it's really just communication, planning, and time management. So if you want to go play Friday Night Magic each week, let your girlfriend or wife know, hey, we're going to spend time this day, or we're going to be going and doing this, because they will be able to digest your hobby a lot easier if you let them know that they are still the focal point of your life. You know, I mean, once a week is not 7 days a week, you know, and so there has to be an understanding that, you know, maybe your wife wants to go do something once a week on her end. Encourage that, you know, that'll definitely give you more ability to do what you want on your end. I'm sorry, Greg, I've rambled on a lot about this stuff. Do you have any tips for people who want to work magic and content creation into their fabric of their life?
I mean, expect to record late at night.
Yes.
A lot of times when we're doing these recordings, we're either recording at 8 a.m. in the morning or 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night, sometimes even later.
Yeah.
But don't try doing this when you're tired.
Oh, man.
Oh, geez. You make mistakes. You don't have the energy. And your viewers will see it. They'll make comment on it. And we know you guys have already to us a couple times. And it happens. You can't control everything, but you do what you can.
Right. And ultimately, if you can keep putting that content out on a consistent basis, we love trying to get you guys an episode a week. You know, I mean, part of why I started, or why we started wanting to do this podcast, was because I loved listening to magic podcasts. I loved watching YouTube videos. And when I ran out of stuff to watch, I wanted to create something, because there's got to be other people in my shoes who want to, you know, hear and digest other stuff. So, you know, if you want to do something, don't let people tell you, you shouldn't do that, you should do this instead. Do what you feel is interesting. You'll find your niche. Even if you have, you know, less than 100 viewers, less than 100 people listening to you, there are still people out there, and word of mouth travels fast. You know, if you make a good enough product, if your content is consistent enough, then people will find you, you know? So just keep plugging away. And like I said, just communication, time management, and planning, and you'll be able to get it done. No problem at all.
Yes.
So, all right. Well, that's going to bring us to the end of this episode. Unless there was anything else. Oh, one other brief thing. Last weekend, we mentioned that SCG had a no ban list modern tournament. If you can, go and check it out. They broadcast the top eight on Twitch. It is strikingly similar to Legacy. And I'm going to go on here and just say, if there were more no ban list modern tournaments, then I honestly believe that these people who are screaming for kill the reserve list, bring the stuff back, I think that might bring them down a notch or two, because you're able to use all those one-drop cantrips in blue. You're able to use cards like Umezawa's Jitte. You're able to use Sensei's Divining Top. You're going to have Miracles. You're going to have Colorless Eldrazi. Yes, there is a lot of stuff that is very powerful. But that in turn gives you opportunities to innovate. I think it's a great path to go down. I think if we have more no-ban list modern tournaments, that people will just be allowed to create more and more ridiculously powerful decks, which in essence is what Legacy is. So
yes.
Yeah. that's my two cents. That's it. We'll move on.
No, it's a good two cents.
Yeah. I mean, Mental Misstep is a card, but it stinks against Colorless Eldrazi, you know?
Yeah.
But then again, you have Ceremonious Rejection, you know, there's whole different ways to go about this. And you have that new black card, that instant, you know?
Yeah.
Oh.
That's going to be the new box office breaker.
There you go. You heard it here first on The Win Condition. Greg is calling that card to be $40. All right. Moving right along. No. We'll see how it does. Anyway, all right. Let's get out of here before we draw on too much. But not before we remind everybody that this show is brought to you by Flipside Gaming at flipsidegaming.com, where any order you make over $10, use that promo code WINCONDITION, save yourself 10% off your total purchase. Purchases over $100 get that free shipping, and that promo code will help contribute to future show giveaways. Greg, where can these fine folk on the internet find you?
Well, you guys can find me on the Twitter at noobslasher2003.
And you can find me on Twitter at MTG_Sean. The show is at The Win Condition. Shoot us an email at thewincondition@gmail.com. Check out our YouTube channel. The link is in the show notes. And all that being said, Greg, thanks again.
Always a pleasure. Next time you guys hear from us, I'll probably be in Vegas.
Vegas, baby! Vegas. Oh, man. We'll see if we can get some on-site, on-location recording for that.
Maybe.
But anyway.
Maybe. We'll see.
All right. Well, we will talk to y'all next week.